This is the Special Needs Connection with your hosts, Randy Van Ness and Annette Zarate from the Skills Academy Vocational Center, your community resource to help the families get the skills they need to build a brighter future. Here are your hosts, Randy and Annette.
Good morning. This is Randy Van Ness with Skills Academy, and you're listening to Special Needs Connections. We've been going over different topics to help the special needs person in your life get the services they need and live a happier, more balanced life. This week, we're diving into Social Security benefits. Very scary topic. Again, remember, this is a hard topic. This is a hard process. This is one of those times where you've got to be tenacious like a pit bull, man. Grab on, dig in, shake your head, and just sink your teeth into it, because it is not an easy process. They say that 80% of Social Security applications that are mailed in for disability are turned down their first time through. And it could be on something so simple, like you didn't put a middle initial. And yes, I've actually seen somebody get turned down because their federal record didn't match their state record because they forgot a middle initial. And this was for a wheelchair-bound kid. Don't think it has any sense, rhyme, or reason. You've got to remember that it is not an easy process. And I'm going to say that over and over through this. Don't go jumping into, well, I'm going to hire a lawyer, a Social Security lawyer right away. Don't do that. They're going to take 1/3 of the money you recover right off the bat. So that doesn't really help you where you need to be. Try it yourself first. Second time, call us. We'll walk you through it. There's no charge. We just help. Remember, if there's an issue, call Skills, call Randy or Annette, my cohort who's not here today, at 719-722-5551. Or our website is skillsacademyvc.org. And you can reach me through our website. You can leave me a message and we will get back to you. But there's a lot of steps here. So please listen up, get out your pad, and let's start figuring out what your child or the adult in your life is eligible for with Social Security. And third time, then, if you're still not getting anywhere, then call the lawyer. Do not jump right into a lawyer first. It's a waste of your money and it really doesn't help. They don't have a better close rate than anybody else. We all hear the term Social Security. They get Social Security. They get Social Security. What does that mean? Well, it means there's two different programs. There's Supplemental Security Income and Social Security Disability Income, which are both federal programs that provide cash payments to people who meet federal definition of disabled. But similarities between the two programs end there. There are three main differences between the program. SSI, that's the check that's $794 a month, is a means-tested program. SSDI is an entitlement program. What does that mean? It means although both are administered by the Social Security Administration, the two programs have vastly different financial requirements. SSI is designed to meet basic needs of elderly, blind, disabled individuals who would otherwise have a hard time paying for food and shelter. SSI is so narrowly tailored for this particular set of people, it is a very strict set of financial requirements, making it what's known as mean-tested benefit. You will hear that over and over. Mean-tested means you have no other income source. You have to prove you're poor, basically, before you can get this. It's supposed to be, that's your basic income. When people are talking about universal basic income, this is it. If you have an issue where you can't work and you just cannot earn a basic living, the government will give you $794 a month. And we'll talk later about how you can be using that. So SSDI, by contrast, is an entitlement program that is typically available to any person who has paid into Social Security system for at least 10 years, regardless of their current income and assets. Younger beneficiaries and disabled adult children of retired or deceased workers can also meet different requirements, but they can also get that money. In theory, all qualified workers are potential SSDI recipients, even high-income earners. This is important. Say you have a kid who was in the military and becomes permanently disabled. They get SSDI. They also get VA benefits and everything else, but that's beside the point. My son, Brian, who I talk about quite a lot here, he started working when he was in high school and he worked a regular job. on one of his jobs, he was injured, and he became eligible for SSDI because he paid into it. So instead of getting SSI, which is a basic $794 a month, he gets SSDI at a rate of $950. His wife, Sarah, had worked since high school, too. When Brian became injured, she became quite traumatized because she saw what happened to Brian at work, and she could not go back to work. Her amount is $1,100 a month because she worked a lot longer than Brian. And they'll get that for the rest of their lives. They don't have to go back every couple of years and prove that they're still disabled. That is a permanent disability. They don't have to prove the means. They don't have to go back every 2 years and prove they've grown a new brain, which made no sense to me. But my other son, Kevin, who has not worked regularly, he's just worked a few weeks here and there, and then he couldn't hold the job. He gets SSI. That is the means-based one, the $794 a month. The way the government looks at it is $700 goes to pay for room and board, and $94 is his spending money. It's called PNR, personal something. Oh, gosh, I can't ever remember that one. But it's their resources to pay for things like, you know, if they smoked cigarettes or haircuts or any personal items. So $700 a month is to go for room and board, and the rest is to go for personal items. So SSI beneficiaries typically receive Medicaid, because Medicaid is the means test one, where you don't have income, so you can't pay for insurance. SSDI provides access to Medicare. So in most cases, a person who receives SSI immediately qualifies for Medicaid benefits, because Medicaid is a joint state and federal health care program that typically provides very comprehensive coverage for the beneficiaries. Many people may apply for SSI primarily because the health care that comes with it. So that means if you don't have insurance, and you don't have minimum salary, and you can't be on mom and dad's insurance anymore, but you're disabled, you can go to SSI and get your care that way. You might not have the money to pay for one of those very expensive Obama plans, but this would work. On the other hand, SSDI beneficiaries are eligible to receive Medicare 2 years after they're deemed eligible for SSDI benefits. Medicare is a federal health insurance program that covers routine hospital services and most but not all primary medical care. Medicare is not as comprehensive as Medicaid. It doesn't cover everything. And many Medicare beneficiaries purchase what's known as private Medigap policies that fill the holes in the primary Medicare coverage. If your child is truly disabled, they can get both. That's one of those little secrets they don't tell you. Two of my three were able to get Medicare, Medicaid. So they don't need gap insurance. The government picks up the gap. So that really helps with them being as disabled as they are. It can really help pick up that gap. So the financial benefits can be very different between SSI and SSDI. And they vary widely when it comes to the amount of money provided. In 2020, the federal SSI payment standard was $783. That's gone up to $794 this year. While the average SSDI payment will be $1,200 a month. See, that's a big difference there. Since SSDI is based on beneficiaries' earning record, some SSDI recipients can receive much more than that. In addition, SSI benefits is reduced by any other income received by SSI beneficiary. So many SSI recipients will receive less than the $794 payment standard. In most cases, if a person receives SSDI benefits that is higher than the max SSI payment, she won't be eligible for SSI at all. What does that mean? With SSDI, you can still earn money at a much higher rate. On SSI, you are very limited on what money you can earn each month without losing your benefits. It's very big cost offset, and we'll take a look at that in a minute. But the cost offset is what hurts a lot of people on SSI. It makes it so they can only work part-time. If you get SSDI benefits and you heal up and you want to go back to work, you can do that up to a certain amount each month. But it's a much higher amount than under SSI. So most Social Security disability claims are initially processed through a network of local Social Security offices, the field offices. And it's called Disability Determination Services, or DDSs. You'll get a lot of paperwork from DDSs. Some of the stuff will be just like one line, so-and-so is reviewing. And then you'll get another one, so-and-so is reviewing. And then you'll get another one, so-and-so is reviewing. I probably got five so-and-so is reviewing when we put in who had not worked before. So his was a much harder case. So you get that a lot. So keep track of it, because sometimes in that they will say so-and-so is reviewing and found this document missing or found this information missing. That's why it's worth it. You might get one of these a week. Open them, look closely. Page 2 and 3 is where they put everything. So subsequent appeals and unfavorable determinations may be decided in the local level, the DDS, or by administrative law judge at their Office for Disability Adjudication and Review. You don't get to that point till you're appealing it. Social Security representatives in the field offices usually obtain applications for disability benefits in person, by telephone, by mail, or by filing online. Forget that. That line is outdated with COVID, of course. Everything's online. You can't even walk in the Social Security office. We used to go in once every 2-3 days with clients to Social Security to get stuff straightened out, get rep payees straightened out, all that fun stuff. Not anymore. You have to do it all by phone or online. So the application and the related forms ask for a description of the claimant's impairment, treatment sources, and other information that relates to the alleged disability. Claimant is the person with the disability. It sounds like it's some evil person, but it's a claimant is your person with the disability. And here again is back to paperwork. Paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. If you have your kid's IEP that they've been in special programs all the way through school, any diagnoses, if they're part of TRE, get the TRE in process, CIS level, get all of that, all helps back your claim and will keep you from getting denied first time through. Field office is responsible for verifying non-medical eligibility requirements, which that's back to age, employment, marital status, or Social Security coverage information. Then the field office sends the case to DDS for evaluation of disability. Okay, so back to who's eligible. If you are married and your husband is a major in the Air Force and the military back then didn't cover benefits, you couldn't get your kids Medicaid to get them speech therapy, occupational therapy, and all that. My husband and I back in 93 had to legally separate so we could get our kids medical treatment. The military at the time did not provide all the treatment our kids needed when we started to adopt special needs kids. We had to legally separate it so I could get my kids Medicaid because my husband made too much money as a major, which is silly, a major with 5 family members. He didn't make that much, trust me. But we had to legally separate so my kids could get the benefits that they needed. The military would not pay for speech at that time. They would not pay for behavioral. They would not pay for occupational. They wouldn't pay for any of that. And the school district sure didn't pay for it. So we had to legally separate and live in separate homes so I show a lack of income enough so I could get my kids the services they need. We're parents. We do whatever it takes to get our services for our kids. Quick reminder before we move on with our fun topic of Social Security. This is Randy with Special Needs Connection. We're sponsored by Skills Academy Vocational Center. And our number is 719-722-5551 if you have questions on all this fun stuff we're doing on Social Security. It's worth it when you get through it. It is a pain. So again, feel free to call me or Annette if you have any questions on this. We will be glad to help. This is Randy at Special Needs Connections. We'll be right back. This segment of Special Needs Connection is being brought to you by European Nails. I cannot say enough about Tony and Christina at European Nails. They are very caring towards our special needs family members, and some special needs adults really have trouble taking care of their fingers and toenails. Men and women will both benefit by having their nail care done by European Nails. Call Tony and Christina at European Nails at 719-532-9999 or go by European Nails. They're open 7 days a week at 1735 Briargate Boulevard, right across from the Chapel Hills Mall. This is Randy Van Ness with Special Needs Connection. Welcome back. I'm from Skills Academy. All right, back to our fun how to process this. DDS will start sending out things for medical sources first. to try and prove that your kid has it or that person in your life has that. This is the wrong way to go. This is the way they turn most claims down. You need to get the evidence yourself. You need to have all the records together yourself. You need the doctor's letters. You need the testing. You need everything. If DDS has to do it for you, you're looking at 6 months to a year. They don't care if doctors don't respond and they do not follow up. They send out one letter and then they wait and wait and wait. And then you wait and your child waits and you get no services and no benefit. You really need to take action here. Get all your documents together. Get all your doctor's notes. Another good thing is all your prescriptions. All the prescriptions your kid's on. Everything they've got. My youngest son has a very deadly allergy to Altaria mold, which is found on hay. So he can't work in certain locations. He can't go to farms. He can't go to county fairs. He can't do anything like that. When we were putting in his Social Security benefits, we used that. We put that in too, and it helped to give it the little push over the top. It was just one little extra thing we could throw in there. Does your kid have sleep apnea? Do they have autism and it causes social anxiety disorder? Have been prescribed Zoloft for the social anxiety disorder? Have all that there. Have the letter from the psychiatrist. Get a copy of all the prescriptions. When they started, that will be enough to get you going. And again, feel free to be frustrated. Because everybody is. I have seen people turned down that should never have been turned down. My own niece, it took 5 years in her getting legal help for her to get her disability payment. She was run down by a drunk driver and was paralyzed on one side, and they still turned her down 3 times. She had to get a lawyer to get help. The woman used a walker, and they still turned her down. When they did pay her finally, she got a big giant check and the lawyer took half of it because they had to go to court on it. Really try yourself first, but if you have to, like I said. Back to the differences. Here's back to the differences that really make a difference. The DDS, when we're talking about Social Security, they're going to think about 2 things. Are you disabled and do you have a financial need? SSDI only cares that you are disabled and you have worked and you have contributed to Social Security. So if you work 10 years under the table, sorry, you don't qualify. If you work 10 years walking dogs or as doing babysitting, you don't qualify. It has to be a job where you paid into the Social Security system. And that's a real pain because I know I was self-employed and I didn't pay into Social Security and found out later, I don't qualify as much money as I should because I didn't pay into the system. If they turn you down, it is really, you have to appeal immediately. And again, figure you're going to be turned down. They have to keep all those records in the field office for up to 5 years. So if they turn you down, you don't have to start all over again, but you have to do a lot of it. To qualify for SSDI benefits, you must have worked in a job covered by Social Security. Then you must have a medical condition that meets Social Security's definition of disability. In general, you pay monthly benefits to people who are unable to work for a year or more because of the disability. So this is an AFLAC. That pays you for, because you're going to be out for 2 months because you're having surgery. This is an AFLAC that pays you because you broke your arm and you can't work for a while. This is, you've got to show that the disability will last more than a year. And this is where it starts to get funky. If you have cancer, it does not qualify for SSDI. It does not make you qualified. If you have something like you need a heart stent, but it is not major heart disease, it doesn't qualify. Those are things you've got to know. The disability must be projected to last more than a year. That is the key. You do not file for SSDI unless you know that disability will last more than a year. Other than that, you're just wasting your time. But benefits will last until you can work again on a regular basis. There's a number of special roles called work incentives that provide continued benefit and health care coverage to help you make the transition back to work. So say you've been on SSDI for 6 months and you might be ready to go back to work. They have all kinds of different transition programs so you can slowly start back to work and keep your benefits going and keep your medical until you're ready to go back to work full time. If you're receiving Social Security benefits when you reach full retirement, your disability benefits automatically convert to retirement benefits, but the amount will remain the same. What does that mean? It means when you turn 65 and you're still receiving disability benefits, it just becomes your regular Social Security benefits. And then it goes under a whole different means test of how much you can earn. How much work do you need to earn? Brian and Sarah are perfect cases. Sarah worked for 10 years. Brian only worked for 6. But Sarah gets $1,100 and Brian gets $950. So it's not really a big difference. So to meet definition of disability, you must have worked long enough and recently enough under Social Security to qualify for benefits. Social Security work credits are based on your total yearly wages or self-employment income. You earn up to 4 credits a year, which is just a bunch of gobbledygook. Basically, you earn 1 credit for each $1,400 in wages or self-employment income. When you earn $5,880, you've earned your 4 credits for the year. So it's very easy to get those 4 credits, $5,880. I've talked to a lot of parents who let their kids work part-time to build up that $5,880 because they know later on they might not be able to work. They might not be able to hold a job. So if you can get that special needs person or kid in your life working least, you know, 5 years earning these benefits, you should be very good. You should be able to get the 20 credits to qualify for disability benefits on your age. You need 40 credits, 20 which are earned in the last 10 years, ending with the year you become disabled. Younger workers can qualify with fewer credits, which is nice. Again, my son only worked 6 years and he qualified because he had a devastating injury that left him unable to stand on his leg full time and go back to work anytime soon. And he was younger and he had less credits. But because the disability was so devastating, we were able to do that. What is disability under their rules? You cannot do work that you did before because of your medical condition. You cannot adjust to other work because of your medical condition. Your disability has lasted and is expected to last for at least 1 year or result in death. This is the strict definition. Breast cancer does not fit this. They don't expect breast cancer to result in death anymore, and they don't expect it to last more than a year. So it does not meet this criteria. That's the strict definition of disability. Their program rules assume that working families have access to other resources to provide support during the period of short-term disabilities, including workers' comp, insurance, savings, and investments. So they don't help you with anything short-term. They only help with long-term. How do they decide if you are disabled? Are you working? Have you earned more than $1,300 a month? You will generally not be considered disabled. If you're not working, they'll send you an application that makes a decision on medical condition. Is your condition severe? Your condition must be significantly limiting your ability to do basic work-related activities. Lifting, standing, walking, sitting, or remembering. That's a big one. Remembering. You might have a high-functioning person with special needs that has short-term memory problems, especially kids with fetal alcohol syndrome. Is your condition found in the list a disabling condition? For each of the major body systems, they maintain a list of medical conditions that they consider severe enough that prevent a person from doing substantial gainful activity. If your condition is not on the list, they decide if it's severe enough of a medical condition that is on the list. Diabetes. You might have type 1 diabetes, have a pump. It is not considered disabling enough. There is some processes to help speed this up. There's compassionate allowance. Certain cases that usually qualify for disability can be allowed as soon as the diagnosis is confirmed. These are the death sentence diagnoses like acute leukemia, Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, and pancreatic cancer. That is done on that because those are deemed to be death sentences. There's no treatment for those. The other is the quick disability determinations that can use a computer screening when there's high probability that they're going to allow that. Are you already a paraplegic and now you've got cancer? Are you already using a walker and now you've had a stroke that's non-recoverable? That's when you have multiple disabilities. And then the final big thing is, can you do the work you did previously? He said, my son was injured at Fort Carson. He got a chemical poured on him, and it burned through to the bone in his leg. He will never be able to stand like he could before. He'll never be able to run. He'll never be able to last a whole thing working a kitchen job. And that's what he did, is he worked in the kitchen. He can never do that job again. Can you do any other type of work? This is when they start working with Department of Vocational Rehab, finding you some other work you can do. They will try their best to find you other jobs to fill in. They'll even send you to training. If your person has special needs, like my son, there's no way he could learn another job. It was hard enough for him to learn that first job. He's not going to job train into something else. They're very limited to what some special needs can do. But there are some special circumstances for people who receive disabilities who are workers that qualify in their own records. So if they're blind or have low vision, if you're a worker's widow or widower, there are benefits for a disabled child where you can get your benefits off of the person who, like your parents, and there's benefits for wounded warriors and veterans. We're going to talk about this when we get back from our break. We will be right back. You're listening to Special Needs Connection. I'm Randy Van Ness with Skills Academy Vocational Center. I want to touch base real quick on some of the new programs at Skills that have just started. We have the only certified vocational program for special needs adults certified through the Restaurant Association in the nation. That is really cool. We're doing this right here in our hometown in Colorado, here in Colorado Springs. But we do have kids coming from all over the state now to be part of this program. After 12 months in our culinary or our baking program, our students graduate with a culinary certificate. They then go into a 15-week paid internship with the Restaurant Association at Restaurant Association members. There's about 80 of them here in the Springs, including some that are going into different schools like Colorado Early College to do work in their cafeterias and stuff like that. So our kids graduate with a culinary degree. They graduate with 15 weeks experience. Our guys get all the experience they need to go into a baking position, doing full cake decorating. They go into kitchens. Their certificate through the Culinary Institute is in line cook. So they are certified line cooks. So they're not just beginning dishwashers. Our bakers know how to bake bread. They know how to do pastries. They know how to decorate cakes. They know how to do everything a beginning baker knows and then some. It gives our kids that leg up that they need to get that job. And they don't go out there alone either. We go with them and do job coaching when they start their first job. We start the first week with them 5 days a week. And then we stay with them for at least a year, one day a week, coming in, meeting with them, helping them with understanding new things at their job, helping them with any relationship issues they're having, helping them with any conflicts, helping them how to ask for a raise, how to advocate for themselves. All those skills that our guys might have trouble with, we help them get in place so they're more successful at the job. So that is our new exciting culinary program. Again, we're the only place in the country doing it because we are the test site with the National Culinary Association and Restaurant Association. This is Randy at Skills Academy. Give us a call if you have any questions. 719-722-5551 or at our website at skillsacademyvcvictorcharlie.org. Welcome back. This is Randy, and you're listening to Special Needs Connection. I'm Randy from Skills Academy. Our number is 719-722-5551. If you have any questions that we can help with helping the special needs person in your life, please give us a call. We're here to help. We've been talking about Social Security benefits, the difference between SSI and SSDI. SSI is the needs-based test where it's based on your income being low income. SSDI is something you've earned by working. So those are the two biggest differences between them. There are special rules for people who are blind or have low vision. They have to have less than 2200 vision for them to qualify for SSDI. But they can qualify for SSI just by having low income. There's a number of special rules for people who are blind that recognize the severe impact of blindness on a person's ability to work. For example, the monthly earning limit for people who are blind is generally higher than the limit it applies to non-blind disabled workers. It means you can earn up to $2,100 a month without your income being lowered from your SSDI or SSI payments being lowered. So you get to earn a lot more money if you're blind. I want to jump right in right now into what is called the representative payee. Say you have a kid who is disabled. They can't handle their own money. They can't pay their own rent. You need to handle all that for them. You can become their representative payee. You'll hear it called a rep payee. It's a person or organization that is appointed to receive the Social Security SSI benefits for anybody who can't manage or direct management of his or her own benefits. A payee's main duty is to use the benefits to pay for the current and future needs of the beneficiary and properly save any benefits not needed to meet the current needs. A payee must also keep records of expenses. When they request an annual report, the payee must provide an accounting to Social Security on how they use the saved benefits. What does that mean? We are rep payee at Skills Academy. We're rep payee for about 10 individuals. It's 10 individuals who are in residential program and they can't handle their money themselves. If they got their money themselves, they'd be out on the street. Or somebody would jump them for it. Or they might use it for drugs or alcohol. For numerous reasons, they can't manage their own money. $700 of every month go to pay for their room and board. So wherever their housing is, we use $700 a month off the top to pay for room and board. And then they get $94 a month for discretionary spending they want. And it's up to them. We might not agree with it. Maybe they're spending it on alcohol. Maybe they're spending it on drugs. Maybe they're spending it on cigarettes. We might not agree to it, but they have the right as adults to have that money. We don't get the right as a rep payee to say where they can spend it. I have a son who I am rep payee for. He gets his money every month. I do break it into chunks for him. He gets $25, so he actually gets more than the $94. But he manages that himself, and he always runs short. Every week he's asking for extra money because he can't manage his money. So we use the $700 to pay his room and board, and then we give him the $25 a week for his own spending. I don't get to say that don't buy that $25 movie at Walmart because then you'll have no money left for the rest of the week. Even though that's the truth of it. He'll have no money left and then he'll be asking me for money. I don't get to make that call. Legally, that money is his and he gets to make that call how to spend it. The law requires most minor children and all legally incompetent adults to have rep payees. Social Security off the bat will say, oh, your kid can probably manage their own money. We have to apply. We have to sometimes go to the courts, go to Social Security and say they really need help because they are incapable of managing their own Social Security or supplemental Social Security payments. So we have had to do this many times, especially with the kids that we get from the courts that are homeless and living on the street. They get their $794 and then they're out on the street doing drugs or somebody's rolling or someone's stealing their money. And it's really sad, but it happens. So we go to the court and we petition and say, hey, we need to be the rep payee. They cannot handle the money themselves. Look how they're handling it. Look how they're living on the street. And it's hard. Our duties as rep payee is to determine the beneficiary's needs and use his or her payments to meet those needs. Save any money left after meeting the beneficiary's current needs in an interest-bearing account for their future needs. So say they want to save up and buy something big. We can do that. As long as they have less than $2,500 in the bank, you can do that. You can save towards a big trip. You can save towards things like that. But you have to show that the money was used on them, not you. You can't buy a ticket to go with them on that trip. That has to come out of your money, not their money. You have to show how it was used for their benefits. benefits. You have to report any changes of events that could affect the beneficiary's eligibility for payment. You got to keep records of all payments you receive and how you spent or saved them. You have to report to SSIA any changes that would affect your performance or your continuing as rep payee. And that means if you got arrested, you've got to report that. You got to complete reports accounting for your use of payments. And you've got to return any money that they're not using for their benefit. So say somebody changes agencies. They're no longer with Skills. They've changed to another agency. But Skills just got their check. I have to return that money. I can't just sign it over to the new agency. I have to return it, and as soon as a new rep payee is appointed, then we can get that done. You must use the benefits in the best interest of the beneficiary according to your best judgment. Be careful with this. If you have a kid that's very high functioning, I have seen kids put claims against their parents. My parents are mismanaging the funds. Then APS, Adult Protective Services, gets involved, and it could just be a vengeful, spiteful little poop head. Oh gosh, I said that. I have seen this happen. Keep receipts. Keep everything. Prove that you're not using it for you to go on vacation. You're using it for them to go on vacation. Proof that you're using it. Again, $700, you don't have to prove anything. That $700 is yours for providing room and board. It's that $94 that's going to bite you in the butt every time. So keep records. You cannot, as rep payee, sign legal documents other than Social Security documents. You do not have legal authority over earned income, pensions, or any income sources other than SSI. You cannot use a beneficiary's money for the payee's personal expenses or spend funds in a way that would leave the beneficiary without necessary items of service like housing, food, and medical care. You cannot put a beneficiary's Social Security or SSI funds in your own bank account. You must have a rep payee bank account. It's your name and the beneficiary. You cannot use a child's dedicated account funds for basic living expenses. This is for the people under age 18 that you get SSI funds for. If your kid is under 18 and you're getting SSI, you cannot say this is for room and board. You are their parents. You are expected to pay their room and board. It has to be for above and beyond. You cannot keep conserved funds once you are no longer the payee. We had that case where we got money for somebody moved on to another agency. We couldn't keep those funds. We had to immediately get those funds right back to Social Security. You can get in big trouble that way. And you cannot charge the beneficiary for services unless authorized by SSA to do so. So you cannot charge your kid from that $94 to run them to the bank. You cannot charge them for meals. Well, I made this meal for you. Give me part of that $94. Doesn't work that way, guys. That $700 a month is for room, board, and medical care. You cannot charge that person room, board, or medical care above that $700. So your job is just to make sure the current needs of the beneficiary is met. That is the biggest job for a rep payee. It's hard to become a rep payee. It's even harder to change a rep payee. So do not give Uncle Fred the rep payee over your child because you're sick and you're worried. You'll never get that money back from Uncle Fred. Just keep that money with you and keep in charge of it. You must report to Social Security if the beneficiary dies, moves, marries, starts or stops work, the disability condition improves, if they start receiving other governmental benefits, if they plan to leave the U.S. for 30 days or more, if the beneficiary is in prison for a crime that carries a sentence over 1 month. If the beneficiary is committed to an institution, SSA is not going to pay you room and board if the person's not in your home. So if they're in jail or they're in an institution, they are not going to pay you. You have to let Social Security know. We are going through that with one of our clients right now. He got himself tossed in jail for drunk and disorderly, and he will not get his full benefits for the month. So the host home he's in will not get a full month's room and board because they haven't had him for the full month. If the beneficiary is a child and the parents divorce or child custody changes, you need to let them know. Other things you must report is if they move from a hospital, nursing home, or other institution. if they get married and they separate from their spouse. Remember, I have Brian and Sarah. They're my married couple. I've talked about them many times. If they were to split up, I have to let Social Security know. And the other thing you must know, and this is so important, is you never let that account exceed $2,000. You need to spend it down. Buy them clothes. Take them on a trip. And it's $3,000 for a couple. You must buy that down. You must spend it down. Because you get over that $2,000 threshold for 5 consecutive days, they will reduce benefits. So if you're saving for a vacation, buy the ticket ahead of time. Buy the luggage. Buy the clothing. Whatever you need to do to spend that account down. You cannot have too much money in an account with Social Security, which sounds really awful because how do you save for the future? Well, we're going to go over that in a minute. We're going to talk about ABLE account, something we have here in Colorado that they don't have in a lot of the other states that allows you to save money for your special needs child. It allows you to put away pension money and stuff like that, so it helps your special needs child without messing up their benefits, because that's a big deal. When you have a special needs kid, like my guys, you know, like I said, one's on SSI and the other two are SSDI. And there's so many different rules that govern each. How can I save money? How can I allow them to save money for trips? How can I allow them to save money for big things? Well, that's when we start getting into the ABLE accounts. So we'll talk about those in a minute. This is Randy Van Ness from Skills Academy. You're listening to Special Needs Connection. And today we have been talking about Social Security. This segment of Special Needs Connection is being brought to you by European Nails. I cannot say enough about Tony and Christina at European Nails. They are very caring towards our special needs family members, and some special needs adults really have trouble taking care of their fingers and toenails. Men and women will both benefit by having their nail care done by European Nails. Call Tony and Christina at European Nails at 719-532-9999 or go by European Nails. They're open 7 days a week at 1735 Briargate Boulevard, right across from the Chapel Hills Mall. Welcome back. This is Randy with Special Needs Connection, and we've been talking about Social Security benefits. We've moved on to rep payee because that's an important topic. Say you have an adult, a child, or adult family member who is part of a residential program. Do you let that residential program take over as rep payee, or do you keep the rep payee? It's a question I have. I have kids. I am rep payee on 2. I am not on the 3rd. I did that because the one that I kept rep payee on is a little more difficult of a person. He has been kicked out of programs, he's been kicked out of residential, things like that, where the organization who's serving him might change over time. And we want to be able to keep his benefits intact when he's changing organizations. My 2 that are easy, no problem. I'll give up their rep PE every day. They're easy. I don't have to worry about it. But the one that's difficult, I keep his rep PE. He might change organizations. He might burn out a residential group or anything like that. Residential agencies and rep payees. What is that? If your kid or that special needs person in your life is receiving residential services, that means they're on the DD waiver and they're getting their housing paid for through an organization like TRE, Blue Skies, Developmental Pathways, NECCB, you can make that agency the rep payee. That means they're in charge of managing, tracking, and submitting all the SS funds that go through them, including pay stubs. They're responsible for doing the annual disability and Medicaid benefits eligibility. They're responsible for covering the costs when there's a break in services. They're responsible for doing the spending down when nearing asset limits. And they're responsible for laying the groundwork for future planning. So it takes it off your lap. If your child is behavioral, like mine that I just talked about, sometimes having somebody else manage the funds takes that target off your back and puts it on somebody else, and they tend to listen more. Spend downs. You've heard me mention it now 3 times. That's to stay within the countable resources limits. A rep payees or teams can help with spending down accounts with items that are needed. Maybe your kid wants to buy a new bed. Maybe your kid wants a new video gaming system or one of those, a big expense. You can have them save over a couple of months, and then their rep payee can help them spend that down, but they better keep the receipts. Again, it's a lot of receipts, so that's why a lot of people like using organizations for doing managing this. In residential host home settings, benefits are used to pay for room and board after the PNF funds are pulled out. PNF is $94 a month that they get between the first and the third, and the $700 is charged as room and board. That 100% of that room and board needs to go to the provider of the house where your child is living. If you're the rep payee, that $700 a month must go to wherever your child is living. So if they're in a host home, that money must go there. If they're living in your home, you get to retain that money. But you need to put a lease agreement in place. So I actually have a lease agreement with my son for $700 a month, and that's to pay his room and board and utilities and cable, all of that, which is quite the deal, I must say, especially in our house. Our house is a great house. But if your child is not living with you and they're living in a host home, that $700 a month is not your money, even if you are the rep payee. It must be paid for room and board. That's their rent, that's their food, that's all that stuff for them to have that room in the house. And if you're self-paying for this, please make sure you have a lease and that you're getting a receipt each month that will show that this person is being paid, because I have seen people come back and say, oh, you never gave me that money. Yes, we did. No, you never paid me. You owe me, you know, 5 months rent for your kid. No, we paid you. Where's the proof? Keep proof. Please, please keep proof. So we talked briefly. We've only got a few minutes left, and I want to talk about ABLE accounts. It's Achieving a Better Life Experience Act of 2014. ABLE. How they come up with these acronyms, I have no idea. But it's not part of that $2,000 cap for SSI and Medicaid. So it grows tax-deferred and tax-free, and there's only one ABLE account allowed per person. So I can't set up five ABLE accounts for my kid. And the eligibility is, has the disability occurred before age 26, and are they eligible for supplemental Social Security? If they are, then you can set up this expense account for your kid. And the person who can set it up is either a parent, legal guardian, or agent acting under power of attorney. So we have several kids in our agency that we act as their power of attorney, and we can set this up for them. An ABLE account is a way to save money to help your kid, to save for long term. Here's the one problem with an ABLE account. You don't want to put too much in it. You don't want to save too much, because if the ABLE account designated beneficiary passes, Medicaid will come and seek reimbursement for any medical expenses. And then the remainder would go to the ABLE account beneficiary's estate. So they can seek up to $20,000 a year in back payment for the last 3 years in medical they put out of pocket. So you got to be careful on how you populate your ABLE account. You can contribute up to $15,000 a year and more if your beneficiary is working. This total includes contributions from individuals, trusts, estates, partnerships, associations, company or corporations, and includes family members, friends, guardians for the beneficiary. When my husband passes, my son will get his military retirement, but that would put him above the total he needs for him to keep his Medicaid. So that money can go right into his ABLE account. Some of the qualified disability expenses that you can use the ABLE account money for is education. If my son wants to go to a training program that costs $15,000 for a year, well, he sure can't save that. Remember the $2,000 limit? But I can use money in the ABLE account for him to do that. We can use it for housing. We can use it for transportation. My kid would never use Metro Mobility, but he'll use Uber. So we could put, you know, $500 a month on an Uber card from that card. It can go for employment, training, and support. Assistive technology. and related services. A lot of assistive technology is not covered under Medicaid. I wish they would have covered with Medicare. I don't know if anybody knows, they don't cover hearing aids. I had to pay $3,000 out of pocket for my son's hearing aids. This would have covered that. It does financial management and administrative services. It can cover legal fees. It covers funeral and burial expenses and some basic living expenses. We have one girl that has an ABLE account, and her parents donated a house, and they use the ABLE account to pay her mortgage each month. It pays her real estate property taxes. It pays her gas, electricity, water, sewage, and garbage. That's things we can use the ABLE account. But ABLE accounts cannot exceed $100,000. If it does, then they lose their SSI benefits. Not SSDI, but SSI benefits go away. But you will not lose the Medicaid part. So you might lose your SSI, your $794 a month, but you do not lose your Medicaid benefits. There's all kinds of ways you can use an ABLE account. You can use it for aggressive options and put it in like an ABLE stock account, or you can just use it like a checking account. So that's up to the rep payee and the parents. So ABLE accounts are really good. They're really great to get set up if you can for your kid, if you have that income or if they have extra income coming in every month. It is a great place to tuck it in where they could save for big expenses. Living in a home is not cheap. God forbid my husband and I pass, our house is expensive. By setting up an ABLE account, it would pay for all those monthly expenses for the rest of my kids' lives because there's no way they could save enough or pay enough. Just the taxes alone on our house. So that's a lot of money for a special needs adult to be able to come up with. So that doesn't work very well for them. By putting together the ABLE account, it allows us to put aside that money for them to grow that money without us worrying about it affecting their insurance. So rep payees can set that up. Parents can set that up. Family members can set that up with parents' direct approval. Grandparents can say, I want to set up an ABLE account. Parents must have signing rights. So if there's some conflict there, that's not going to work. But there's a lot of organizations out there that help with setting up ABLE accounts. We do not. We use different agencies to help us set up ABLE accounts. Give us a call at Skills, Randy or Annette, again, and we can help you with getting you to the right place. So this has been a very long talk on Social Security. This has been a lot of information. Should you be your kid's rep payee? Shouldn't you be? Could you keep this account? Can you not keep that account? How do you get qualified? There are a lot of twists and turns in this subject matter. Give me a call, Randy, or give Annette a call, 719-722-5551 at Skills, or email us at skillsacademyvc.org. And let's see if we can help you out. We might not be able to, but we at least can find the right people to send you in the right direction so you're not just going blindly into this mess called Social Security. It's not easy, folks. I got turned down on my first one. I had to put in a second time for my first one. I had to learn the hard way how to do this. Don't try and reinvent the wheel. Call for help. We can help. The ARC has the program that can help if you're not part of our organization. There's school districts don't help anymore. They used to do a lot of this, but they don't. And remember, if your child's under 18, there's services, but they're based on needs. Over 18, there's services not based on your income, based on their income and needs. This has been Randy Van Ness with Special Needs Connection. Again, if you have any questions about our show or if you need help finding the services in the right place in the right agency, give us a call at 719-722-5551. That's 719-722-5551. We will be talking to you next week. Thank you.
Be sure to tune in to the Special Needs Connection every Sunday at 10 a.m. here on KPPF, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. The power of information.